This is the Mike Malloy Show on the Nova M Radio Networks. But as you may have already ascertained 4 seconds into the show, this is not Mike Malloy. My name is Johnny Wendell, and I am from K-Talk AM 1150 in Los Angeles. The show does not broadcast on K-Talk, but I am here all the same. It is a pleasure to be filling in for the majestic Mr. Malloy, the legend of the mic. Right before this show, oh, by the way, before we start, I don't know if you were watching this at all, but in the Yankees-Cleveland second game of the playoffs, around the eighth inning or so, a plague of flies descended on Jacobs Field in Cleveland. What its pertinence and relevance is to absolutely anything, God only knows. But it seems to me that it might be portending something biblically amazing to be happening in the future. I don't know. I just had to say that. If you'd seen that, because it was one of the most remarkable sights I've seen in all my years of watching baseball. At any rate, I had to get that out of my system. You know, usually before I do a show, I show up here in the studio, and I'm in Burbank, California right now. And right before I go on, always, my wife has my two kids. I got a 5-year-old son and a 2-year-old son call. They always call to say, hi, Daddy. Hello, Daddy. All that stuff. Both of them, the 5-year-old and the 2-year-old, they love it. They love the ritual. They've been up here before. They've seen it. And it's kind of like one of those things. We're talking about baseball. You know, baseball players have certain rituals with their kids. We know that Jason Kidd, who used to be a Phoenix Sun point guard, now New Jersey Nets basketball player, blows kisses to his son, PJ, in the stands, TJ Kidd. It's a ritual that we have. Jason's got his rituals. I got my rituals. At any rate, so they're calling, and I'm just thinking, like, my God, you know, my kids, I think everybody's kids. Well, maybe not everybody. I can't speak for everybody. My kids, they're the world to me. My world is revolving around them since they were born, you know, and I had them relatively late in life, and my wife is not that much younger than me. Same thing. Had them relatively late in life, and they called, and it's just like, it just lifts your heart to hear your children's voices and to know that they're okay and to know that they're healthy and to know that they're well. Because if you're a parent, you know that the most critical thing on the planet is waking up in the morning and knowing that your kids are healthy, that they're not sick, that they don't have, God knows, a childhood illnesses. There are so many of them. When my first son was born, he went into natal ICU, the NICU. He was born with low blood sugar, and he was there for 4 days. It was a harrowing experience. He wasn't really that sick because it was a first-time experience for me and my wife. We were terrified. And we had reasonably good health insurance, because I got to tell you, if we didn't have good health insurance, we would have been screwed majorly. The bill would have been $38,000 for these 4 days in the NICU. Where was I going to come up with 40 grand? Was it going to manufacture it? Was it going to print it like the U.S. Treasury does? No. Screwed. Or our kids would have been born at L.A. County if we had no insurance, along with thousands of other people a month waiting in line like a mill. But no, we had insurance. We were okay. And that's why this issue that came up this week with this S-CHIP stuff, with Bush vetoing this S-CHIP health bill, this kids' health bill, this insanity from this madness, makes me wonder if the government that we have in Washington, D.C. presently is not completely over the moon demented. I mean, it's not like not that much of a question or a wonder, given the insanity of the last 6-7 years. But the fact that you would deny children, baby, children can't go out and work and go buy health insurance. Oh, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to have a paper route, and I'm going to save up my nickels and dimes and quarters, and I'm going to go buy Blue Cross. I'm going to go to Kaiser Permanente with my dough. No, they can't do that. I may have to get a paper route, given what Blue Cross charges me. But that Bush vetoed the S-CHIP. The S-CHIP, as you know, the Democrats wanted $35 billion basically to significantly cover, all children in the United States of America. Okay? That's what they want to do. The Senate passed the expansion with a veto-proof margin, 67-29, and the House fell a little bit short. Okay? This is $35 billion. It's a government-financed health insurance, and it would be extended, and this is the issue, apparently, according to Bush, into the middle class. That's what he says. This is Bush's problem with the S-CHIP program. It is insurance to cover children. He says, you know, $83,000 a year, that's not middle class. That's rich in America. Ha, 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 ha. Scumbag. Where is $83,000 a year wealthy in America? Certainly not here in Los Angeles County. $83,000 a year. You know what that means? It means just moved out of a cardboard box under the freeway. What is $83,000 a year in Phoenix, Arizona? Two-bedroom apartment. What is $83,000 a year in Miami, Florida? Hurricane blows me away. It is not. I'm sorry, that's not wealthy people. And yet, this moron president of ours, this knucklehead, this criminal, has the gall to claim that the government doesn't have $35 billion, which, by the way, you want to know how many weeks that is in Iraq, my friend? 17 weeks, 4 months, $35 billion. That's what we are piddling away. And he doesn't have it, or so he says. And he's vetoing it. And the fact of the matter is, he's vetoing it because he claims, and this is what he said the other day, what Bush actually said. I'm not even going to play the cut of it because I was so horrified when I heard this thing. He claims that this is a slippery slope to socialized medicine. That's what he said. Are you amazed? I'm amazed. Socialized medicine? Based on what? Based on what, my friend? I got to tell you something. I don't know about you. I don't know you. I don't know if you have children. What if you had to go... And your kid plays out in the street on a bike, knocked off by a car, lands on their knee, splits their knee open, needs stitches, got to go to the emergency room, right? You know what a trip to the ER is in this city or in any other major city? You're talking $800 to $2,000. The average pay for a four-person household in America, the average, the middle, is $42,000 a year. Where are you going to come up with $800 out of nowhere? You know that we are stretched from paycheck to paycheck. And yet, we have the least sympathetic administration in my lifetime in Washington that doesn't seem to understand the importance of covering children. I mean, frankly, as far as I'm concerned, health insurance is ridiculous anyway. It should be coverage for everybody. You want to know how to solve this country's ridiculous problems? Expand Medicare to cover 300 million people. But they would never do that. Makes too much sense. Saves too much money. No, this is the kind of craziness that we have. We have these morons, these mongoloids, these gangsters and skanksters, these nosebags and hose rags ranting and raving about socialized medicine. They don't understand, my friend, that anything that comes out of my pocket, I don't care if it goes to a health company or the government, is in fact a tax on me. I don't care where it goes. I want it to be reasonable, and I want my kids to be covered. Question, do you care if it's called socialized medicine as long as it covers American kids? And are you as appalled as I am that this greedy, venal, little chicken hawk coward of a president and his scumbag assistants were able to get away with this absolute insanity? Our number is 800-989-1480, 800-989-1480. That's our number here. One more time, with good reason and good feeling, 800-989-1480. I wonder how these people can get up and face themselves in the morning. Because have you ever been to Washington, D.C.? Ever been in D.C.? Other than where the government is, other than Morgan Adams, other than Georgetown, other than most of northwest Washington, D.C., you are talking about Anacostia. You are talking about southeast, southwest Washington, D.C. This is the ghetto. If you're coming in from Virginia, over some of the southern bridges, from Alexandria, Virginia, you're going through poor neighborhoods. You are driving by the people that you are depriving of coverage. How can you not look out the window and look at their faces? And when my babies called me 25 minutes ago to say, hello, Daddy, my heart was raised because I knew they were well, and because I thanked God that it wasn't my wife calling saying, guess what, we had an accident, guess what, he has a fever. I don't want to hear that stuff, and I have good coverage. My children mean the world to me. All American children mean the world to their parents generally, I would assume. I can't speak for anybody else. I am speaking for myself. And yet, what have we got here? A completely unsympathetic government in Washington, D.C. Question. Do you care what it's called? Is it time for universal health care? Let's talk about this. 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. My name is Johnny Wendell, and this is the Mike Malloy Show. We will be back.
Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth. I know you don't know what life is really worth. It's a all that Peter is gold. After the story has never been told. So now you see the light. Hey, stand up for your right. Come on,
get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
This is the Mike Malloy Show on the Nova M Radio Network. And I am Johnny Wendell sitting in for the vacationing Mr. Malloy. And we're talking about this S-CHIP, which is Children's Health Insurance Plan. In the United States of America, George Bush's fourth veto. And he vetoed this thing. Bush has made four vetoes in his entire career as the President of the United States. Check out what they have been, okay? He checked, I'm stunned by this, he vetoed stem cell, he vetoed a timeline, he's vetoed the S-CHIP. Astounding. This is remarkable stuff. And this is the big claim that President Bush has said about, he doesn't want to put any more money into this program, it's $35 billion, okay? And what he says is, this bill would result in a program that's meant to help poor children, turning it into one that covers children in households with income to up to $83,000 a year. In reality, that isn't really true. It maintains current law. It limits the program to children with families, incomes up to twice the federal poverty level, which is about $21,000 a year, up to $41,000, 50 percentage points above a state's Medicaid eligibility threshold, and that varies from state to state. When he says $83,000, that's some scumbag think tank in Washington, D.C. saying that the poverty level in some states is about $40,000, family of four. I'm sitting here in Southern California. I got to tell you something. You got a husband, a wife, two children, and you're pulling in $41,000 a year. Yes, that's right around the poverty level. That is what they are talking about. This is malarkey. And if you don't think that a lot of this has to do with good old-fashioned nauseating politicking, check this out. At least one-third of the newly covered children under the S-CHIP program would have been Latino. According to the Center of Budget and Priorities, about 40% of Hispanic children already receive health coverage benefit through CHIP, and they were going to insure 1 million more. So you have this component. Because as you know, in an election year, it's become really, really big on one side of the political spectrum to assault that particular part of the American society and stratum. Congratulations, Latinos and Hispanics. You are next year's whipping boys and girls. And this S-CHIP veto from Bush, who claimed he was going to be your friend at one point, has gone right out the window. Tony. Yeah. Calling from Sirius in Virginia. You're on with Johnny Wendell on the Mike Malloy Show.
Hey, Johnny. How's it going?
Tony, what do you think?
You know, I've been pulling my hair out since the second that Bush vetoed this thing. I don't understand the country and how asleep they are. I mean, I fit into that category. I've got four children.
Okay.
Three of them are...
me asking you how much money you make a year?
I make less than $80,000. I'm self-employed, and
right.
I'm in the real estate market, so I've
so you're getting screwed royally right now.
Getting screwed. And, you know, I mean, thank God three of the children are stepchildren. Their biological father's paying for their health insurance. But I'll tell
right.
you what, if I had to pay for all four of their health insurance, I would be, I don't know where I'd be right now.
Now, let me ask you something. Tony, when you hear this stuff about, well, this is a slippery slope to socialized medicine, what do you think when you hear that kind of rhetoric? I'm curious.
Who gives a damn? You know, it's the government helping the people. That's what
yeah.
they're for. That's what they're for. And if Bush wants to talk about is socializing, you know, as a fascist regime, that's kind of what they do.
Well, yeah. But here's the deal, Tony, in a nutshell. This is what cracks me up more than anything else. So we got to talk about this because undoubtedly you and I run across people all the time that throw the socialized medicine crap in my face and in your face, right? Hear it all there. Socialized medicine, like they have in Canada. Canada has terrible care. Canada, you got to wait 8 weeks for a mammogram, okay? You hear that stuff all the time, right? What I want to know is this. Whether I pay my money to Blue Cross or I pay my money to the government, I'm still paying it out. That's what I don't understand. People don't understand. First of all, when you have for-profit health care companies have to make money. They're publicly owned. They're stock trades on the NYSE. They have to make money. There has to be a profit margin. That means they're going to tack 15 to 20% in costs above and beyond what everything else costs. All right? For starters. For second, baby, healthcare is a service. It's not a product. It's not a pair of shoes. It is not a car. It is not a Fender Stratocaster guitar. It's a service, which means the only way you can make money on it is by parceling it out in bits and pieces. You don't give everybody what they allegedly, supposedly want, you know, like to walk out a healthy man or woman out of a hospital. You can't do that, right? You got to parcel it out. Every Kleenex costs money. Every aspirin costs money. Every time a nurse sticks a needle in your arm, it costs money. And they try to limit that because they are stuck to a profit margin. I don't want to sound like Karl Marx Jr., but the fact of the matter is this healthcare system is not just killing us consumers, it's killing business too. It's massacring us. Do you realize? Here's a case in point. Case in point. Then we're going to take a break. And by the way, if you want to talk to me, we're at 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. Case in point. Toyota Motors is going to open up a plant in Alabama. 4,700 new jobs from Toyota in Alabama. They get to Alabama, and they realize two things. One, Alabama won't spend any freaking money on their education system. The average worker down there probably can't work on an assembly line on a modern car. Secondly, private health care. Toyota can't afford it. And where did they go? Where is that plant going up that was going to provide almost 5,000 new good-paying jobs in the United States of America? Ontario, Canada. And why? Because the Canadian government provides insurance that you pay into single payer. If this thing keeps on going, there won't be a manufacturing job left in America. Ask the people at the UAW that were negotiated right out of their shoes last week. This is the Mike Malloy Show with Johnny Wendell sitting in. We're at 800-989-1480, and that's right, baby, I will be back. This is the Mike Malloy Show on the Nova M Radio Networks. My name is Johnny Wendell. I'm in for the vacationing Mr. Malloy. We have never heard each other before. I am generally on a radio station that doesn't carry Mr. Malloy Show. It used to, K-Talk AM 1150 here in Los Angeles. And if you want to communicate with me in any way, shape, and form, talk to me about anything once we're done, I'm at TBCWRA, TBCWRA at AOL.com. It's easy to remember. The Boston Celtics will rise again, TBCWRA at AOL.com. I'm from Boston. I'm a Boston sports fan. The Yankees just lost in the 12th or 13th inning to the Indians. All right. The Red Sox are up over the Angels. All is well with the world. New England is going to cream the Browns this weekend, and the Celtics are going to win their 17th title. Yes, that's when the acid just kicked in. I know. Okay, forget about all that. At any rate, what we are talking about is the S-CHIP program. President Bush has vetoed it. You see, like, the idea that all children in America are covered with, have health insurance, that's anathema to George Bush. That's a fancy word which means it makes him want to vomit. Anathema, it goes against the grain with Mr. Bush believes. Mr. Bush believes that private business can handle this better than anybody else. That would explain the 48 million Americans that are not covered with health insurance as is. That would also explain Mr. Bush's idea, which if you do not have health insurance, President Bush suggested, you just go to the emergency room. He said that. You think I'm making that up? No, he actually did say that. Just go to the emergency room. I guess he said that because let them eat cake was already taken. No, let them go to the emergency room. I'm thinking of my friend Marv Greifinger, 70-year-old man, went to the emergency room. And why did he do this? Because his health insurance had run out. He was a cancer survivor. Went in on a Tuesday afternoon. Died Tuesday evening. He didn't survive that cancer. He couldn't wait for treatment any longer. He sat down on a bench, realized my health insurance and my life are up. And it's incidents like that that make me unashamed to say that I hate these venal, greedy bastards that are running us into the ground, that are destroying our businesses by making it unable for them to compete with businesses in other countries. I am sick and tired of parceling out health care to people as if they are doling out gruel to orphans in A Christmas Carol by Dickens. I'm sick of this stuff. I do hate these people. What is your take on this S-chip insanity and health care in America? And if you got horror stories, I'll be your shrink. This is your couch. We're at 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. Let's see here. We have with us Junior on Sirius from Spokane, Washington. Junior, you're on with Johnny.
How you doing? Actually, it's JR, but that's okay. I'll let you get away with it.
Okay, JR, sorry.
That's no problem. You know, I think about this V-chip deal. It really ticks me off because get down to it. If you think about it, when you get a paycheck,
yeah,
the money that comes out of your paycheck, these people that vetoed this V-chip and, well,
look. S-chip. The V-chip is the thing that goes into a television set to ban kids' programs.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, we pay their health care out of our check.
Ah.
They sit there and say that, oh, it's socialistic and all this, that the government takes care of us? Excuse me. Excuse me.
Ding, ding. JR, you want to hear something fascinating? I got to tell you this, man, okay? I am working out at Gold's Gym today and talking to my friend Denise, who's from a long line of Republicans, okay? I'm also from a long line of Republicans, but not anymore. Hopefully my kids are not going to be saying that. And she is we're talking about this stuff. JR, she says to me, I asked her, what percentage of the government budget do you think goes to social programs in America? You know, so-called, quote, I'm sticking up my fingers as quotes right now, welfare. She goes, oh, I'd say 60%. She's from Weston, Massachusetts. I'm from Wellesley, the town over. And we're both in L.A. Miraculous, right? And I said, no. $3.75 out of every hundred. 3 cents and 3/4 cents out of every dollar, Denise. Shocked. Do you want to know what one of the biggest expenses in our government is? Pensions and health care for the 3 million employees of the federal government currently, not to mention the ones that go all the way back that are still drawing breath for the last 50, 60, I guess now 70 years. That's right, JR. We are paying for their health care. We're also, do you know, these people don't even pay into Social Security either. Why? Because this is the reasoning. I kid you, this will kill you, okay? Because they have given up the chance to work in the private sector and make real boku bucks, and they went inside the Potomac to be taken care of by the government, that's okay. Therefore, JR, Junior, whatever, it is our obligation to take care of them because they've opted out of the free enterprise system. You know what I'd say to them? I'd say, you know something? If I got to scrimp and save, if I have got to hustle with the muscle and tussle every single day in the marketplace of ideas and reality, you get what I get. I really think that at this point, we got to go to the federal government and say, it's real simple. You got two options. Either we get what you get, or you get what we have now. But there can't be any middle ground here. You get covered cradle to the grave, or your children do if you work for the freaking federal government. So do I, because I pay in those FICAs too. I'm liking this idea. JR, you all right? Denise, also on Sirius, in Canada. You are talking to Johnny Wendell, Denise. Denise would appear to have had enough. Oh, my God.
Hello?
Alex, Scottsdale, Arizona.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What do you think, Alex?
my son is enough to be an Indian, percentage-wise.
Okay. Right.
He has health coverage.
Okay.
Under the Indian program. He goes to the hospital.
Yeah.
He has an 8 to 15-hour wait.
Why?
Okay. Because they've got so many people in there. Being in Arizona, we have a lot of Hispanics coming in. A lot of people coming in to use the emergency room.
Right.
They've got
okay.
to serve the emergency room people.
Right.
Okay. Not to blame one race or another, but their emergency room is so blocked up.
Oh, it's
and
insane.
And that's how his health care goes.
Okay.
So I have to spend an extra $75 a week so he has coverage because if he has a catastrophic or something go wrong, we can't get him in the place where he has his own medical coverage.
Unbelievable.
Mom is a self-employed single mother.
Right.
I help her as much as I can.
Right.
But, you know, it costs her an extra $75 a week just to make sure that boy's got insurance.
You want to know
and
something?
And he already has insurance with the Indian because he's an Indian.
I got you. But, Alex, listen to this. This is really interesting. This group called the Cunningham Group in Southern California did a study of emergency rooms in Southern California and in Arizona, and they found out, oddly enough, this is going to blow your mind. You're going to be like, what, really? And this is true. Illegal immigrants are less likely than anybody else to use an emergency room. Do you know this? They found out, and the reason is because the illegals figure if they go to the ER, they'll get tagged as illegals, they'll get sent back, they'll be deported. And secondly, Hispanics in poor neighborhoods, less likely to use the ER. Why? Because they don't know about it. Remarkable, right? Absolutely remarkable. And that is what we are up against right now, as you have hectoring politicians who say, well, it's the illegals that are eating everything up. But in reality, you look at the studies and they go, no, in reality, they don't eat everything up. What it is... It's families that break up. Do you know, by the way, here's an interesting statistic. 50% of all the bankruptcies in America, Chapter 11s, are caused by people who have to go bankrupt because they can't pay their medical bills. How did that happen in America? The home of the free, land of the brave. No, not really. If you don't have health care, you are screwed. I don't get it, man. I don't understand why this is going on. Bo. In Hartford, Connecticut, on Sirius, you're on with Johnny.
Hi, how you doing?
Bo, what do you think?
I'm against it.
Why? You're actually against the S-chip?
Yes.
Okay, well, that puts you with 25% of the public. Go ahead.
Okay, and basically there's two reasons.
Go ahead, please.
The first reason is that there's absolutely nothing the government ever does that turns out well. I mean, look at FEMA. All the money that goes into this stuff, it ends up being wasted.
Hey, Bo, I got a question for you. How old are you?
32.
You're 32 years old. Do you have grandparents? They alive?
They're alive. Yeah,
Okay. Since 1935, Social Security has existed, hasn't missed a check ever. Your grandparents aren't starving. Elder poverty was at 78% of people over 65. Now it's at 10% of people over 65. Now, you can't tell me no government has ever done anything. You go into rural America, Bo, you see like what was electrified in the Great Depression. This was a wasteland beforehand. The government could do some stuff right. You talk about FEMA in the last 6 years. Yeah, I'd have to agree with you. It's been a disaster. But FEMA in the 90s, when it was no longer a fiefdom, it actually worked.
Hold on here.
It worked.
Just hear me out here. Basically, if you think about it, if we didn't have to pay the income tax, and we wouldn't have to fund all these huge bureaucracies with all these things, then we would have more money for ourselves to pay for things like medical care and pay for our own things. And you know, the basis of America is freedom, and with freedom,
right. Okay. And you got 300 million people in America now. When the federal income tax was instituted back in the 19-teens, the country was a third the size that it is now. Now you're going to remove the income tax. What do you want, like a gigantic national sales tax? Great. That we're the top 1% in America can go buy all their stuff in Europe and Mexico, and the rest of us get paid 20% on top of everything in a value-added tax. No, my friend, that is not going to work either. Let us talk about S-CHIP. Let's talk about health insurance. Where are we going to do? What are we going to do? And I have a solution. I'm at 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. My name is Johnny Wendell. This is the Mike Malloy Show on the Nova M Radio Network. We will be back. is the Mike Malloy Show on the Nova M Radio Networks. This is not Mike Malloy, though. My name's Johnny Wendell. It's a pleasure talking to you. If you aren't able to get through, because we've been jamming the phone lines up and everybody wants to talk, I can be reached via email easily. Write this down. TBCWRA at AOL.com. Easy to remember. The Boston Celtics will rise again. TBCWRA at AOL.com. What we are talking about for the last hour is this veto of the S-CHIP program to expand kids' insurance for as many children in America as possible. The president says too many wealthy people, rich people, people who make up to $83,000 a year are going to glom into this program, and it is not healthy. He's out of his mind. He claims it's a slippery slope to socialized medicine. I got to tell you something. I have seen CNN Gallup polls that say as many as 3 out of 4 Americans are saying it is time for a form of Western European, Canadian-type national health insurance. Would you trust the government with your health insurance? I got to tell you something. At this point, I can't imagine it would be any more irritating at all than private carriers. I mean, I can go into my own kinds of war stories and horror stories. Suffice to say, health care costs in my family, in my house, eat up, I kid you not, approximately 12 to 15% of the money I make every year. That has got to end. We are at 800-989-1480, 800-989-1480. Denise, in Canada, you were on with Johnny on the Mike Malloy Show.
Hi there. Sorry I lost you before. First of all, I feel sorry for what's going on in the United States right now. I grew up in a military family from the U.S. I've been living in Canada for the last 30 years.
Right.
And while Canada does have its challenges, as well as Australia, New Zealand, and the U.K. with their socialized applications, you know, the general day-to-day, when my daughter's sick, we don't hesitate about taking her up to our family doctor and getting a prescription, which, by the way, we can afford. Our health insurance that we pay into is $96 a month for a family of three.
How much a month?
$96.
Okay, and by the way, that's Canadian money, which at this point, or amazingly enough, is it parity with the American dollar? It's actually better. Okay,
actually,
so in America, that'd be about $92, $93 a month.
Yes.
Denise, you don't even want to know how much money I pay in. You don't want to know what the average person in America who's self-employed pays in. And you don't want – and I mean, I don't know if you've been following what's been going on our side of the border with the United Auto Workers and the like. But if you're a working person in America, you got to make concessions out the yin-yang to your boss, or else you get cut loose at this point.
That's right. And I feel sorry for a lot of associates that I work with north and south of – well, south of the border – they're in a real predicament. They make fantastic money on the monthly, but it's their life insurance, their health insurance, their home insurance that kills them.
Absolutely.
Their property taxes. My property taxes are $2,300 a year. My home insurance is under $1,000 a year. Oh, by the way, I have flood insurance. And When you look at things globally, it's unbelievable that you have the likes of Bush vetoing health care for children. And what I wanted to say is, whilst we're socialized and you don't think twice about taking your child to the doctor, when something is small,
when something is small, it doesn't become a gigantic issue. Thank you for calling. I appreciate it. It's true. If you were worrying about going to the ER, it's going to blossom into nothing. A kid across the street from us had an infected lymph node in his throat. He had health insurance. They knocked it out with antibiotics in a day. Suppose they didn't have it. The thing would have blown up in his neck. But somehow we're supposed to be happy. Unbelievable. This woman calls from Canada. Canada's supposed to be a socialist country where everything costs so much more. I'm thinking of moving there now from talking to her. This is insane. Harlan in Los Angeles, you're on with Johnny.
Yeah, JW, my point that I wanted to make, because I can afford insurance, but I'm struck by the irony that I got a man in the White House, lives in a government house, has a government job, gets a government pension, flies a government plane, gets a government limousine, and tells some poor white, Hispanic, or black kid that they can't have one single government benefit.
Well, of course not. Because that's socialized, right? That's socialism.
Right. And doesn't seem to bother anyone. And I just find that tremendously bothersome. The other point that I wanted to make is that in America, you know, we have this Michael Moore sort of like idea of universal health care. And then on the other side of the aisle, we got what I call absolutely nothing. I would settle for at least a debate from the Republicans that says, how about just a rule that says you can't deny someone for a pre-existing condition?
Yeah, wouldn't that be something? Okay, thank you for calling, Harlan, by the way. Yeah, because after all, Harlan, that's how they make all their dough. That's how they make all their dough. Like I said before, they parcel it out. A pre-existing condition. I talked to a woman today who told me that she has been breast cancer free for 30 years. Guess what? They're still jacking her premiums up through the roof. She's been clear for 30 years. This is what we are up against, people. This is madness. Bill in Denver, Colorado on Sirius. You're on with Johnny. Quickly, because we're running out of time, Bill.
Okay, yeah, I'm a health care provider, and I pay out of my pocket for private health care insurance, and I'd like to see a national system, and I don't think the S-chip is in any way a step towards national health care. I think they're just afraid to lose their lobbyist dollars.
Ah, okay, so you don't think in any way this is a step towards socialized medicine in reality?
Well, not a chance. I mean, if you look at the cost for a family of four,
yeah,
and you look at the cost for private insurance, and you see that with this proposal for the new S-chip rules, it would apply to people who make $50,000 to $60,000 a year, but they're barely struggling to pay for their health insurance.
Sure. You know what's really interesting, Bill, is that Sandra Day O'Connor, Supreme Court Justice, one of her grandchildren has a chronic illness, and she was saying, you know, if I didn't have this kind of thing going on, if I hadn't worked for the government my whole life, my kids wouldn't be covered. Hey, Sandra Day, inasmuch as you and your fellow Supreme Court justices installed this animale grande that we've been dealing with since 2000, et cetera, et al. Ad nauseum, December 12, 2000, kiss my butt, Sandra. When we come back, a CIBC economist says that there will be $100 a barrel oil in 2008. Let's talk about the ramifications of this. Johnny Wendell on the Mike Malloy Show. Mike Malloy Show. This is the Mike Malloy Show, the Nova M Radio Network. My name's Johnny Wendell, talking to you from Los Angeles, California, at KTLK AM 1150. If you're motivated tomorrow at noon Pacific Coast time, I will be on KTLK AM 1150.com if you like what you hear. If you want to talk to me about whatever you want, or about whatever you heard, whether you were riled, whether you were smiled, I'm at tbcwra@aol.com, tbcwra@aol.com. Well, as I was alluding to in the last hour, a terrifying, horrifying, scarifying, petrifying story comes out of cnnmoney.com a couple of days ago from the CIBC, the Canadian Investment Bank, CIBC. The head of their world markets, a gentleman by the name of Jeffrey Rubin, says that we will definitely see $100 barrel of oil in 2008. And this is what Rubin is saying. He says that big exporting countries of oil, like Mexico, will use more and more of their own oil. Now, we know that, for example, the People's Republic of China, since their economy started percolating, they're importing more oil for the same reason. Mexico's got more money because of their booming oil business. China, because of everything else. Okay. And also, Rubin says that in his home country of Canada, they are also flush in money, and also they are up against a weak American dollar. So they no longer have to export as much oil. Okay, so he says the oil-rich nations like Venezuela, Saudi Arabia, Mexico are going to put pressure on global oil prices because of that their own economies are doing so well. And also, because easily recoverable or easily retrievable sweet light crude oil, that is the best oil there is drying up in the world. We know that at Dhahran, which was the biggest pool of such oil in Saudi Arabia, they're now basically dragging water out of the ground at that point. We also are fairly sure, according to Alan Greenspan, that the main impetus for the invasion of Iraq was to get at that 112 billion barrels of sweet light crude that sits near the surface of the ground in Iraq. It's too bad that angry Iraqis with guns and IEDs are also sitting atop that 112 billion barrels of oil. We also know that one of the reasons for the increased scrutiny on Iran is for the same reason. But I don't want to get into geopolitics and oil. That's not germane to what we're talking about right now. This economist sees $100 a barrel. Now, we know a barrel of oil is around 80 right now, and a gallon of gas is around $3. Do the math. You are talking a minimum, if oil is at $100 a barrel, of $3.75 to $5 a gallon of gasoline. That's what could be happening if this happens. He says that oil exports, this guy Rubin is saying, that Russia and Mexico will likely decline by about 3 million barrels of oil a day over the next 5 years, and the biggest drop comes from Mexico. Mexican oil exports to the U.S. will dry up in 5 years, according to this guy Rubin. Okay? This is what we're looking at. Tower Power, they were banned back in the 70s with big horn section, all that stuff. They had this hit song back in 1974. There's only so much oil in the ground. That's 33 years ago. That song was a hit. It was on the radio. There's only so much oil in the ground. The Tower of Power. Great band. And people never heeded that basic, simple adage. There is only so much oil in the ground. We know this is a fact. We know there are over 6 billion people on the planet. We know that the People's Republic of China is going to import 2 to 4 million vehicles a year from Toyota, but made in also cars made in the United States. La-di-da, wonderful. However, they all burn oil, and there is only so much. We know that the most recoverable oil in the planet is now in the sands of Alberta, okay, which is a province in Canada, as you know. You probably saw this on 60 Minutes, too. They said there's enough oil to run the world's infrastructure for 50 years in Alberta. Unfortunately, it is in the sands of Alberta. It's not very good quality. It's going to cost a lot of money. It's not easily recoverable. And so when this guy, Jeffrey Rubin, who is Canadian himself, also says oil is going to $100 a barrel, that should be setting off alarm bells in your brain. You should be saying to yourself, wait a minute. It's at 80 today. It's going to go up to 100 by the end of 2008. And by the way, think of it like, I want you to roll this over in your mind. 2008 is an election year in the United States of America. United States of America, biggest oil consumer in the world. 27% of the world's oil is consumed here. You know damn well that George Bush and Die Partie Republikanische are going to do everything in their power to keep the price of oil low. And yet Mr. Rubin says it's too bad. It's inevitable. It's invariable. It's going to go to $100 a barrel because the fact of the matter is that so many of these countries with oil are sitting on top of massive amounts of money, and they're going to sink it into their own infrastructure. And to build infrastructure means you need fuel. They're going to keep it themselves. And that's what we are looking at right now. $100 a barrel for oil. And this is disregarding whether or not the lunatics, maniacs, sickos, and wickos in Washington, D.C. decide that they want to bomb Iran. Then you're looking at not just $100 a barrel of oil, but $150 when the Straits of Hormuz are closed down. That's a little tiny gap in between the Arabian Peninsula and Iran. Shut down, baby. They can drop mines from the sky. The Iranian Air Force, boom, no tankers go through. 40% increase in the price of a barrel of oil. You want to see a 40% increase in what a gallon of gas is? You want to see $1.25 tacked on? That would be for starters. Now, we've talked about the issue of peak oil. You know what peak oil is? Peak oil says easily recoverable oil at its summit, okay, at the top. Books have said, I know Mr. Hubbard's book claimed that we reached peak oil 35 years ago. Apparently, that's not true. However, it has gone past the peak. When you are now talking about oil in the sands of Alberta, you know that massive amounts of oil in the United States aren't tapped. Did you know this? I don't just mean off the coast of Santa Barbara or in the Gulf of Mexico. In the Wind River Mountain Range of Wyoming, There's massive amounts of oil, but it's called oil shale. It's in the rock. The rock has to be pulverized, and the oil has to be dragged out of it. It's not easily recoverable, and it's of lousy quality. Ergo, it too is going to be over $100 a barrel because you have to factor in the expense of making and refining this crappy oil. It's not sitting an inch under the surface like it is in Saudi Arabia or like it was in Kuwait. That is what we are looking at right now. $100 a barrel. $4 a gallon at the pump and rising. And for those of you who are not in temperate climates, because I'm in Southern California, I can live without turning on my heater all winter. It gets cold here. Not that cold. I pity you in Minnesota. I pity you in Maine. I pity you in North Dakota. I pity you in Canada. Well, Canada has other problems. However, because it's not like you can, if you are oil, if you're natural gas, if you're oil-based the way you heat your home, what are you going to do, tell your kids? We're going to all huddle together. We're going to put coals in bags like they did back in medieval England. But that's what we're headed for. Because oil is going to be $100 a barrel. And I got to tell you something. When a Canadian investment bank firm, CIBC, that's not some crazy lefty environmental wacko tree-hugging Birkenstock-wearing Al Gore worshiper saying this stuff. This is a businessman who is coming forward and saying, look, this is inevitable. It's going to be $100 a barrel in 2008. Well, if Mexico stops exporting oil to the United States by 2012, and they're what, the third or fourth exporter to this country after Venezuela, Canada, and ourselves? Then a gallon of gas goes to six in this country. Now, what are you going to do about this? What are we going to do about this as a people? It has been said a zillion times. You've heard this expression. I may as well reiterate it. We can't drill our way out of this. Remember when, at the beginning of Bush's term before 9/11, when we were debating back and forth over drilling in the Arctic National Refuge, the ANWR, the Wildlife Refuge in Alaska? And in reality, there was about 7 or 8 months worth of oil up there, and we're fighting tooth and nail over this stuff, right? 7 to 8 months of oil in Alaska. They will be fighting tooth and nail, my friend. If you were in Florida and you were looking out your window over the Gulf of Mexico, and your former governor, Jeb Bush, says nobody's going to drill in the Gulf of Mexico. Your current governor, Charlie Crist, is not quite so sure. The governor of Texas, Rick Perry. The governor of Louisiana, Kathleen Blanco. The governor of Mississippi, Haley Barbour. All of them are like, well, we're not so sure. Arnold Schwarzenegger here in California, we're not so sure. We may have to drill. It's going to be $100 a barrel in 2008. What are we going to do about it? What is the solution? Can we get out of this, or are we going back to the dark ages? Let's talk about this. We are at 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. My name's Johnny Wendell. I'm in for Mike Malloy on The Mike Malloy Show. And I have an idea that you may find perplexing, vexing, or totally sexing. But you're going to have to hold on to hear it here. The Mike Malloy Show on the Nova M Radio Network. My name is Johnny Wendell. I am sitting in for the vacationing Mr. Malloy. We can be reached at 1-800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. I can be reached at tbcwra@aol.com. tbcwra@aol.com. What we are talking about, a CIBC economist, that is the Canadian Investment Bank, says that $100 barrel of oil, in 2008 is an inevitability. It is going to happen. He says that the big exporting oil companies like Venezuela, Mexico, and Saudi Arabia are going to use more and more of their own oil because they are flush in cash and they want to be just like Uncle Sam. And there is not F all we can do about this, so you would think. Are you going to adjust your existence? What do you think about this? I have a solution. It is relatively painless, but will be perceived as unbelievably radical. And I will get to it right after I speak to you. John at KSAC in Sacramento, you're on with Johnny.
Oh, hi.
John, what do you think?
I think we've done nothing for 40 years.
Okay.
I mean, this is no surprise. It's not news.
I know, but are you shocked to find that $100 a barrel oil would have seemed to be an absolute certainty, according to this economist?
Yeah, I find that. I do find that shocking. But then again, 20 years ago, $60 a barrel of oil
seemed ludicrous,
shocking.
Right?
Yeah, it sounded just amazing.
Okay, but not
now. I'm old enough to remember 25 cent a gallon gasoline.
I hate to admit it, but I am too. Yes. Let me ask you something. What do you think can be done? In your opinion, what do you think can be done about this? What would you do if you could tell the American people something? If you were George Bush for a day, I'm not saying that to insult you, okay? What would you do?
That would be an insult.
What would you do? What would you do?
Well, we don't have any problem with punishing people who smoke
right.
or drink
right.
by putting absurd taxes on the products they consume.
Right, admittedly.
I don't have any problem with putting absurd taxes on 400 horsepower fire-breathing monsters, on Humvees, and I mean,
yeah, but I mean, think about this, John. Hold on a second. Just hold on a second, okay? If I am paying through the nose to fill my Humvee as is, you have in fact increased my taxes in reality, because if I chose to drive this vehicle, and my taxes are the same as the guy who drives a Prius, my taxes are higher because I need to consume more fuel. They are already getting punished, okay? Punishment is not the issue. By the way, sir, people will just simply adjust. That's one of the issues here that nobody wants to talk about. You can keep raising the price of gas and oil and gas and natural gas as well, and people will adjust. That's the cry and shame here. We're at 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. Brian, KLSD in San Diego. You're on with Johnny.
Hi, John.
Brian.
My name's Brian. There's several things I'd like to discuss with you. Basically, I'm from Europe, as you can tell from my accent, where gasoline has always been expensive.
Right.
And what they do, they have a very good public service transportation system where cars are actually put on the backs of trains and taken hundreds of miles to destinations, holiday destinations and whatever. And
Brian, let me ask you, you're from Ireland, right?
No, it's England.
You're from England, okay, one of those islands, I'm sorry. I mean, I'm a long way from you right now. Look, England is a relatively small country. I mean, it's possible to get on a train from London, go to Edinburgh, Glasgow, Manchester, Liverpool, whatever. The United States is a gigantic dispersed country. So we can't, the infrastructure issue is not the same.
No, that's not true. Come on. We had the Channel Tunnel, which takes us all over Europe and into Russia and everywhere else. So that's a load of baloney to say that. I'm sorry.
Okay, I know that. But all the same, I mean, from London to Paris, it's 3 hours by car. All the same with the Channel Tunnel made. You know, it's like, here's the thing.
I took my car on the back of a train from Madrid in Spain to Paris overnight. Slept on the train.
Brian,
got off the train in the morning.
Brian, this doesn't mitigate the fact that we're still looking at a $100 barrel of oil. That's going to affect Western Europe like everybody else.
Not if you use alternative fuels like corn, sugar beet, sugar cane, to make fuel.
Right.
The more fuel we make here, the less these Arabs are going to charge us for their oil, because they don't want us to make oil.
Brian, it's real simple, okay? In order to get the kind of fuel you're talking about out of beets, out of grass, out of corn, you need fuel as a starter for that sort of thing. I know that in Brazil, ethanol is, 76% of what they use, but they have been building those plants since the 1970s. That's like 35 years ago. They had a coup in Brazil. Brazilian general says, I don't want to be reliant on the oil from the Middle East. I'm going to have ethanol everywhere. Okay? They did this 35 years ago. We have to change now. And when we come back, Johnny Wendell offers the solution. That would be me. Johnny Wendell. I'm like Queen Victoria. I'm talking about myself in the third person. That's how crazy I am. When we come back, we are going to talk about a solution that is right under our noses and as obvious as the lips on my mouth, if you could see them, which you can't. We're at 800-989-1480. It's the Mike Malloy Show with Johnny Wendell sitting in on the Nova M Radio Network.
I'm breaking out.
This is the Mike Malloy Show on the Nova M Radio Network, and I am Johnny Wendell. I'm in for the vacationing Mr. Malloy for another hour and a half or so. We are at 800-989-1480, 800-989-1480. I can be reached at tbcwra@aol.com, tbcwra@aol.com. Easy to remember, the Boston Celtics will rise again at aol.com, we hope. We are talking about Canadian economist says $100 a barrel oil at the end of next year. The end of 2008, not that far away. It's 14 months from now. You are talking about $100 a barrel oil. $4 a gallon of gas and upwards is an inevitability because booming and burgeoning economies all over the world are going to hold on to their own stuff. Black gold, Texas tea, as they used to say on the Beverly Hillbillies, is not headed for us anymore. It's going to stay in the countries from whence it emanates. Now, what are we going to do? We have heard a zillion times we can't drill our way out of this, can't drill our way out of this off the coast of California, off the Gulf, in the Atlantic Ocean. We can't even drill our way out of this in the Middle East and Iraq because essentially we're getting driven out of that country probably sometime next year as well. So what are we going to do? If you can't drill it and you can't fill it, then what are you going to do? And this is the answer. And this may sound unbelievably radical to you. Bizarrely radical. Fact of the matter is I'm broadcasting to you from Los Angeles. I am looking at what your phone calls are telling me on the internet. This was inconceivable 15, 20 years ago. No such thing existed, okay? The internet is now everywhere. 60 to 70% of American households are wired for the internet, okay? The internet can cut fuel consumption in America by 30 to 40% in 10 years. You may say, what, you're out of your mind. I can't drive the internet. I can't heat my house with the internet. You're psychotic, Johnny Wendell. Give him some meds. Give it to him over the internet. Spam him with meds. Whatever it takes, shut him up. The internet isn't going to put gas in my car. Most of the fuel that we consume when we drive, and driving is what eats up most gasoline in America, as you well know, is doing what? Commuting. Going back and forth to your job. Commuting is what eats up our fuel. In the Hummers that our friend Brian was talking about, in SUVs and Cadillacs and limousines, all the way down to the lowly Mini Cooper and the Prius and Insights, all burn up a ton of gas. And why? Because you got to get to work on time, baby, don't you? Suppose you no longer had to commute to your job. Suppose you could do your job from the comfort of your own living room. Hell with that! With a laptop in your lap in the bathtub, if you so desired. If you floated it on the back of a rubber ducky. You did your job in your house, and you no longer had to commute. That would be the living end of our nightmare, wouldn't it? The average commute in America has gone in the 1960s from 7 miles from where you live to where you work, to 30 minimum, okay? It's 4.5 times what it used to be in the last 40 years, okay? And we are running out of oil. The United States is also a service-based economy. It is no longer a manufacturing-based economy. 18% of our manufacturing base has disappeared in the last 6 years alone. It's gone to China along with all of my freaking money, but that's another story for another time. Now, the average American job where you no longer have to be on site and can be done over the internet, why shouldn't it be done over the internet? That is right. The solution to all of our energy woes in the United States of America are duofold. First of all, we must adopt, embrace, we must passionately make love to the idea of telecommuting. Telecommuting, doing all of your business over the internet and phone, no longer going to a central office. If you think of the professions in this country where this could be done, it's most of them. Now, you know, we got a lot of people in the Southwest. I'm in the Southwest as well. Got a lot of people in Arizona, New Mexico, Nevada, Wyoming, Colorado, Texas, in the temperate part of this country. Every federal building, every state building, every municipal building from here in Los Angeles all the way to the Gulf of Mexico, going north to San Francisco and east all the way to Nebraska, should be outfitted by law with solar paneling. Agreed? If you have ever driven across the center of the United States through the prairies, you will notice that it is windy. Every municipal building in the prairie states, powered by wind power, mandate this by law. Wind power across the Great Lakes. You ever been in Buffalo, New York? Windy as hell. Chicago is the windy city. Why are there not windmill farms all around Chicago? This can be done. We are looking at $100 a barrel of oil. The jig is up forever. Came today, the Jackson 5, 1970. That is right. It is over. We can't wish our way out of this. We can't drill our way out of this. But Johnny Wendell, that would be me, has a duofold solution. Are you with me on this or not? Would you? Would you telecommute to your job if you could? Would you telecommute? We are at 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. Is telecommuting the obvious wave of the future? Abso-freaking-lutely. Look at the kind of jobs that you no longer have to leave the house for. A lawyer. An accountant. A writer, even a talk radio host. I'm doing the show from Los Angeles, being broadcast through a studio in Phoenix. You know why? Because it's a superannuated phone line called an ISDN. I would no longer have to leave Chez Wendell. I wouldn't even have to come up here 10 miles away from my house if I didn't want to. I can telecommute because of my job. All accounting, most sales, jobs where you have to be on site, police, fire, hospital. All true. However, all of them are backed up by rather large clerical staffs, are they not? Why not install the software on the computers of the people who are doing the clerical work and let them stay home? Because if you are talking about 27 to 30 miles an average commute now in America, that's 55 miles both way minimum. Do the math, 275 miles a week. In an automobile that gets 20 miles to the gallon, do the math. Expensive beyond your wildest dreams and stinking up the planet and burning us off the planet. You love them little cuddly polar bears. I do too. I don't want them to be extinct. I want my grandchildren to be able to see polar bears in the zoo. I want them to go to Alaska or the Yukon and see them on the North Pole. I want the North Pole to exist. I don't want penguins to be roasted off the earth via climate change and global warming. And this can be done. And there are other things. There's biomass, there's wind, all of this stuff. But the basis, the fact of the matter is we, you and me, not the freaking oil companies of the hooks in our butts 100% of the time. You and I, we can do something if we uncouple ourselves from the idea that we must be in a central job location. The end of commutes is the beginning of freedom. Now, are you with me or against me on this? I'm not effing around here. We're at 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. Do you see, as I do, that telecommuting, working from home, will reduce energy consumption in this country by one-third in the next 10 years? Thusly, we will be free. Or does the idea utterly and completely revolt you? Because I have talked to people who say, I cannot imagine when I do not, when I, if I don't go to the office, what am I going to do all day? I'll sit around and screw around. I'll sit around in my underwear. I'll drink hot cocoa and I'll watch telenovelas from Mexico. No, you won't. Because the gist of a job, you know what the gist of a job is? I trade my time for a certain amount of productivity. It doesn't matter where I'm sitting. Telecommuting is the wave of the future, yes or no? 800-989-1480. Matt, yeah. KSAC, Sacramento, you're on with Johnny.
Hi, Johnny, how are you?
Very good. What do you think? Is it telecommuting?
You know what? I think that is a tremendous idea. However, I do think that there is one of the biggest drawbacks to that.
Yes.
Is creating the IT infrastructure to make that secure enough to where businesses could implement it.
Let me ask you something, Matt. I got a question for you.
Yeah.
Don't people who work in the upper echelons of most businesses take their work home with them on a laptop already?
Most of them do.
Yes.
But that most of the information that they can take with them is particular information, whereas
it's in a central database, right?
Correct.
Okay, so you stick one person, one security person, one IT person in a downtown location in a great big vault with a huge shotgun, Matt. I mean, la-di-da, you can do that. It can be done. Am I right?
I don't think it's as easy as that.
I know. I'm oversimplifying. But my point is, Matt, look, let's say that I'm running an accounting business or a law firm or whatever. I got 300 people on a floor of a downtown high-rise somewhere, okay? In reality, maybe I need a couple of computer experts, but all of the attorneys, the paralegals, the legal secretaries, the support staff, they don't have to be on site anymore. All they have to do, realistically speaking, is to be connected to a network, to be looking at their computer screen. They can be texting each other on a cell phone. You can be running on a Stairmaster and doing your business. And you don't have to go anywhere anymore. That's what's so remarkable about this stuff. But you know something? When we come back, we're going to talk about this. Telecommuting, is it the wave of the future? I think it is. But it's going to have to change a fundamental way of how the boss and employee look at each other. We're going to talk about that, too. We're at 800-989-1480, 800-989-1480. I am at tbcwra@aol.com. If you want to kick some ideas around with me there, tbcwra@aol.com. This is the Mike Malloy Show with Johnny Wendell sitting in on the Nova M Radio Network. We will be back.
Fly into the sun. I'd break up into a million pieces and fly into the sun. I would not run from the blazing light. I would not run from this rain. I'd see it as an inch and as old, be as into world. Is in my head. The lunatic is in my head.
This is the Mike Malloy Show. Nova M Radio Network presenting Johnny Wendell in for Mike Malloy. I said, like, announcing myself like I'm in a movie or something. We're at 800-989-1480, and we are talking about telecommuting. Telecommuting is when essentially you commute via telephone or internet. You do your job in the luxury, comfort, peace, and warmth of your own home. If you remove actual commuting from American life by 25, 30, 40, 50%, you will reduce energy consumption in this country considerably. And the projected $100 a barrel oil, according to the CIBC, the Canadian Investment Bank, won't hurt you so much. But there are a couple of problems with telecommuting, and both of them are emotional, and they're both on both sides of the transaction. Bosses like to ride herd on their employees. They like to see what they're doing. They want to check up on you. Remember when you were a kid, right? Couldn't never be standing around with your hands in your pockets. The boss would go, pick up a mop. I'm not paying you to do nothing. That is deeply ingrained in the American psyche. It is deeply ingrained, and it deeply sucks, if you ask me. But by the same token, employees in America think to themselves, What am I going to do? I'll have no social life. I won't see my friends at the office. Well, guess what? Your job doesn't owe you a social life. It owes you a paycheck for your production and absolutely nothing else. If we no longer commute physically to a central workplace, we burn up a lot less gas, and $100 a barrel of gas of oil, excuse me, and $5 a gallon of gasoline is not that big a deal. Telecommuting is going to save us from going back into the Stone Age. You may not agree. That is why I have this phone number, 800-989-1480, 800-989-1480. Mike at KSAC in Elk Grove, you're on with Johnny.
Oh, hi.
So?
Yeah.
Well, yay or nay, Mike?
What's that?
Well, yay or nay, Mike? What do you think?
Oh, I disagree with telecommuting on a couple of levels. One is it doesn't solve the problem of pollution. People are still going to get in their cars. And people are still going to drive all over the place. I mean,
A lot less. You will grant me that they'll do it a lot less.
No, they won't.
You won't. Okay. Do you commute to your job? Where do you work?
No, I work in Sacramento.
And Elk Grove is a suburb of Sacramento. How far do you go every day?
It's about 15 miles.
Okay, so it's 30 miles a day. It's 150 miles a week, right?
Yeah, and I take a bus.
You take a bus, okay?
Yeah,
that's very good, but not everybody can, okay?
No, I understand, and that's my argument that instead of arguing for telecommuting,
right,
we should be arguing for public transit.
Okay,
because public transit lifts all boats.
Okay, I know, like a rising tide lifts all boats, I know. Yeah, but here's the problem. In order to build this kind of infrastructure, which doesn't exist in a fair amount of this widely dispersed country of ours, you are going to have to, via eminent domain, seize an awful lot of land. That's going to displace an awful lot of people. It's not going to work. Telecommuting, Mike, it works right away. And we don't have any damn time. We got 14 months until $100 a barrel of oil. Telecommuting, baby, wave of the future. Faye in Oakland, California, from Sirius Radio. You're on with Johnny.
Hi, Johnny.
Faye.
I just wanted to call and let you know that I do telecommute, and I telecommute 3 days a week. It was one of the stipulations when I took this job.
Do you have children that you got to watch?
No, I don't. I have a cat, but no children.
Okay. Right. You got to watch cats, too. Yeah, okay.
I'm watching my gas mileage is what I'm doing. And the office is 30 miles away from where I live, and I told my prospective employer that unless I could telecommute, there was no way I was going to go to work for them. And they said, okay, fine.
Good.
So I go into the office 2 days a week, and I telecommute 3 days a week, and then I bought a hybrid.
Let me ask you something, Faye. Theoretically, if you wanted to, you could get that all the way down to 2 days a month if you had to, probably, if I had to guess, right?
If I had to, I've only been there, you know, a few months. I stretched it from 2 days a week to 3 days a week already.
Right.
So, eventually if I continue to work there, I definitely will work on them to telecommute.
Okay, thank you, thank you. I appreciate
that. And it's not the 100% answer to that. To our problems with oil, we do need to get off of oil altogether, and we
here's the deal, Faye. What you're talking about, though, is it is an immediate reduction in how much we are using. It also sets up an interesting paradigm, Faye. If one out of every 10 American jobs turn to telecommuting next year, which is possible, that's 10% less consumption of gasoline. That would mean there would be a gasoline surplus, likely, in this country, which would drop the price of gasoline. Wouldn't that make everybody happier? I dare say it would. Scott, on KLSD in San Diego, you're on with Johnny.
Hello, Johnny.
Scott.
I'm a telecommuter. I have been for over 8 years.
Yeah.
And I work on corporations' intellectual property, their most secret documents. And I work on these documents from home.
Right.
I have a couple of computers. I have a broadband connection to the internet.
Right.
I have a lockable office door.
Sure.
I'll get the whole thing. I have an office at home.
So, Scott, what you're saying in effect is that security issues are nullified by somebody that can be reasonably trustworthy.
Exactly. If I use existing and available security precautions, including security software, I'm fine. So most managers, and I'll tell you the truth in your audience, most managers don't want to ride herd on you to make sure that you're doing your work, they want to make sure you're there so they can stop by and chit-chat a little.
So they can be your friend. But guess what, Scott? They don't pay you to be your their friends, or you to pay them to be your friends, or however the situation, the dynamic works. That's why, I mean, work is not supposed to be idyllic. It's not utopic. When we come back, we're going to talk about the police state that is America today. The Mike Malloy Show, Johnny Wendell sitting in, the Nova M Radio Network. Mike Malloy Show. Johnny Wendell here. I know it's like it's really, really lame to sing along with the bumper music, but I love the song I Want to Be Sedated by the Ramones. This is the Nova M Radio Network. I'm sitting in for Mike. Mike is vacationing today. And we've had so much fun. I got to tell you, it is a pleasure talking to you tonight on a Friday night. I'm just going to go home, put my kids to bed. After all this, come back and do my regular radio shift tomorrow here in Los Angeles on Saturday morning. But I have enjoyed this immensely. Got to tell you, I enjoy this an awful lot more than flying in America right now. Getting on an airplane, getting to the airport, it's like I Want to Be Sedated says, put me on an airport, get me to the airport and put me on a plane, hurry, hurry, hurry before I go insane. I Want to Be Sedated came out in 1978. Joey Ramone, 29 years ago, could have been talking about getting to the airport and putting on a plane right now would drive you insane. Because as you know, going to an airport right now is extraordinarily anxiety provoking, isn't it? I mean, unless you are sedated, unless you are on Haldol, Thorazine, Stelazine, Buzz Bar, you know, Mounds Bar, whatever, high out of your mind, it is a very, very difficult and trying experience to fly in America. They make you take off your shoes. You go through metal detectors. It's like going into a freaking maximum security prison at this point. It is a highly harrowing process, isn't it? Going to the airport to get on a plane? Well, this last Monday, the story broke of a horrific incident at Phoenix Sky Harbor Airport in Phoenix, Arizona. I've never been in Phoenix's airport. I've driven through Phoenix. I've never flown in and out of Phoenix. I understand it's exquisite. Very southwestern motif. Lots of turquoise, right? Very lovely, right? No, it's still an airport. And at any rate, on Monday, we heard the story of this 45-year-old woman named Carol Ann Gottbaum who died in police custody at Sky Harbor Airport in Phoenix. Apparently, she had her hands shackled behind her, cuffed, and she was chained to a bench in a holding area. And the Phoenix cops, or the cops at the airport, were saying that she strangled herself with one of her restraints, and that's what killed her. Now, when this story broke on Monday, I got to tell you something that's highly skeptical here. Not just because, or actually partially because, America has become a freaking police state. And because people are psychotic in airports, as is. And because airport security wound up into a fever pitch by the machinations of the Bush crime family, the Cheney adjunct, und die Partei Republikanische, have decided to become mini stormtroopers where a tarmac and planes are involved. Right? Right? So this didn't entirely surprise me, the craziness that has gone on in this country since 9/11/01. But I was more and more skeptical, and I said, and I was on the radio Monday here in L.A., and I said, I guarantee you, as more evidence comes out, this woman didn't kill herself in that holding cell. So that's what they claimed, this 45-year-old woman. She was on her way to Sierra, what the hell the thing is called, in Tucson, the one they sent Limbaugh to dry off of Oxycontin to get clean. Sierra Madre, whatever it's called. Ian, you can throw it up if you know the name of it. I know it's Sierra something or other in Tucson. She missed her connecting flight from Tucson, from Phoenix to Tucson. This, by the way, is 89 miles by car or bus or train. She should have gone that way, but she didn't. And apparently she missed her connecting flight because she took a later flight to Phoenix. She was going to rehab detox because she wanted to say goodbye to her kids in Manhattan. So she got on a later flight and missed the connecting flight to Tucson, went up to the desk in Phoenix at Sky Harbor and said, can I get on this plane to Tucson? No, you cannot. There was a snafu, a screw-up, right? And she wigged out, and she freaked out and started pitching a nutty. Now, you can't do that in the airport nowadays, despite the fact that everybody's walking on tenterhooks, walking on eggshells, wound up and nutty. You can't express any of this stuff. I know that at Logan Airport in Boston this last week, some wise ass actually said something like, what are all those stickers from Qatar? You know, Qatar, the country on the Arabian Peninsula. And the guy says, what about him? He goes, I'm a member of Al-Qaeda. Ha, 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 ha. They detained him all day, too. He was clearly joking. Oh, yeah, I got a bomb. I'm going to put it on a plane, and I'm advertising with the stickers. That's the nuttiness that we're dealing with now. So this woman's in this uptight thing in an American airport, in Sky Harbor in Phoenix, and she goes crazy. And pitches a fit at the desk and starts running around, and the cops come over to subdue her. And they do. Mind you, this woman got bumps. 5'7", weighs about 110 pounds. She's not exactly difficult to deal with. Okay? That's right. Not exactly difficult to deal with. And they dropped her, the three of them. And they stuck her in a holding room. They cuffed her, allegedly with her hands behind her back, and chained her to a bench. And somehow, she ended up dead, strangled. Excuse me, by herself. Now, am I crazy when my first thought in this day and age is that the overzealous, overanxious airport security went crazy, chokeholded this woman, busted her windpipe, and made it look like a suicide? I don't think so. Not when the circumstances of the case and an arrest video is now out. Apparently, Fox News reports that there is an arrest video of this that happened. And it shows her running through the airport and bowing abruptly as she appeared to yell and then resisted arrest. She was knocked to the ground and then picked up suddenly, standing up. Standing up. Not gesticulating wildly. Not going crazy like she was conducting an orchestra. Standing up. She backed away after airport workers and police approached her. Then she was on the ground. It was unclear how she got there. And then the officers brought her up to her feet as she was resisting. Okay. Now, do you think, with this new video and further evidence, that it is going to show that this Carol Ann Gottbaum was, in fact, killed by these airport cops in Phoenix, Arizona? Because I can't believe that anybody who is cuffed and chained with their hands behind them and weighing in at 105, 110 pounds and stuck in a holding cell is going to break free and strangle themselves. How? How would she have done this? They claim somehow she got the restraining chain around her neck. How? Is she a contortionist? No, not that we know of. Was she crazy? Yes. Was she headed to alcohol and drug rehab? Yes. She was not in a right state of mind. Are we surprised that her husband was not with her? No, he said that she was going to be met by friends, but she missed a connecting flight. All of these mitigating circumstances are put into a giant pot, friend, and they are stirred up together. And I got to tell you something, the only conclusion I can come to is when they were dragging this slight little woman off, somebody screwed up on a chokehold. And I think they busted her windpipe. And they threw her in this little holding area, and they chained her up, and she could very well have already been gone. And it's hard to know until an autopsy is done. And frankly, I don't even trust the authorities at this point anymore to do a legitimate autopsy, because I don't trust this kind of nonsense in America today. Are we or are we not living in a crazed police state that turns airport security into psychopaths, winds up people into insanity, and at this point, we are no longer a civilized society? In a nutshell, if you've been following the story, you tell me if you think I'm nuts. Do you think the cops killed this woman in Phoenix, and they're trying to cover it up? I'm serious, because that's what it's looking like to me. We're at 800-989-1480, 800-989-1480. I hate to be talking this way. When I grew up in the suburbs as a little boy, I was raised to believe that the policeman was your friend, that you could go to the policeman and the policeman would help you. The policeman that was the crossing guard by day at night kept your home safe. A policeman wouldn't kill you. A policeman wouldn't put two shots in your dome. No, I'm not a black man. I've never been arrested driving while black. Not Latino, driving while Latino. I never dealt with that kind of stuff. I admit it. I didn't live in the hood where the cop was your adversary. Supposedly he was our friend. But in this day and age, wound up into fierce, hysterical insanity by the psychotic news media. Isn't it just plain possible that we have lost our civilization and that this woman was done in by overzealous law enforcement? I'm not pointing any fingers. It just seems very strange to me that somebody would be able to do a nearly impossible acrobatic act to kill themselves via strangulation while sitting down. Because, you see, generally when people kill themselves by strangulation, what do? They hang themselves. Well, there was no freaking noose there. I guess they were all in Jana, Louisiana, where nooses are real freaking popular. When we come back, let's talk about this. 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. My name's Johnny Wendell. This is the Mike Malloy Show on the Nova M Radio Network. Stay tuned. This is the Mike Malloy Show with Johnny Wendell sitting in on the Nova M Radio Network. Good to meet you if you are just tuning in and joining us. Our number here is 1-800-989-1480, 800-989-1480. And our email is tbcwra at AOL.com. That's where I can be reached. What we have been talking about since the top of this hour on this lovely Friday night in the United States of America is this hideous event at Sky Harbor in Phoenix, Arizona, at the airport, Sky Harbor, a 45-year-old woman that allegedly strangled herself while in custody with her hands bound. A woman named Carol Ann Gutman, about 110-pound woman, about 5'7", three children, daughter-in-law of a labor leader in New York City, headed to Arizona to detox. She had drug and alcohol issues. Apparently, she missed her connecting flight to Tucson from Phoenix, completely freaked out, was subdued by the police, but they found her dead in a holding room about an hour and a half, 2 hours later. And I got a question for you. You're in law enforcement. If somebody is that agitated, would you ever leave them alone, bound or not? Probably you wouldn't. Now, would you? If somebody was that agitated, wouldn't you probably restrain them and call an EMT? That didn't happen either. No, they threw her in a room, allegedly with her hands bound behind her back and with a chain chaining her to the bench. And yet somehow she was able, via miracle, to contort herself into self-execution. I'm telling you, this doesn't wash, and this makes me crazy. This kind of thing makes me crazy. Because it feels to me that this is another instance of overzealous law enforcement in this country, driven crazy by the idea that somehow in the airports of the United States of America, it is the front line on the so-called Great War on Terror. This woman was 5'7", 110 pounds. How terrifying is that? And unarmed. Three people to restrain her, and she ends up dead. It doesn't pass Johnny Wendell's smell test. Do you think those cops in Phoenix killed this woman? We're at 800-989-1480, 800-989-1480. Does it make you crazy to think that at this point in your life you regard the police as frightening, as the most horrific street gang in America? It's happening to me, baby. 800-989-1480. That is our number. Barbara from Cave Creek, Arizona on KPHX. You're on with Johnny.
Hi.
Barbara, what do you think? You're there. You tell me. What's the local news saying?
Okay. Well, the local news doesn't. You know, they're not
corrupt.
Getting into this. They don't want the PR. You know, they got too many people coming in at a local airport.
Okay.
I am completely. Do you know how long she was in that room exactly?
They claim about an hour. They're not entirely sure.
I'm convinced that they killed her.
Okay.
I'm convinced that one of those big brutes that were pulling her off, because she probably went into that room and got even more agitated.
Right, because she didn't want to get arrested, yeah.
Right, and she was, you know, I used to live in L.A., and there was something called a chokehold.
Correct.
And I think they put her in a chokehold, and at 110 at 5'7", she's emaciated.
Right.
She's anorexic. She's not just an alcoholic. She's probably... you know, has bones that could crack, and she's probably, you know, I don't know, I'm making some assumptions, but
sure.
It's pretty easy to put her in a chokehold and kill her in
yes.
about a second.
Of course.
And I think they put her in a chokehold, and they all looked at each other and said, you know, one of those big, giant 300, she had three guys over 200 pounds on top of her.
Right.
One of them probably put her in a chokehold, killed her.
Right.
And...
like, how do we get out of this? We're screwed.
Yeah,
we just killed
screwed.
Somebody. What do we do?
So what you do is you take the long chain and wrap it around her neck and try to convince somebody that she did this to herself. You put
yeah.
her in a position.
Yeah, yeah. No,
and
I
walk away. There's no cameras in there.
Well, apparently, Barbara, there was a camera that showed a rather unusual ritual of her sort of bowing to them and then freaking out again. I got to tell you something. This does not pass the smell test. And the fact that we're talking back and forth here, and everyone's like, well, you know, yeah, I got my doubts. It means it's in the back of everybody's mind at this point, don't you think? Ron at Wins in Miami, Florida. You're on with Johnny on the Mike Malloy Show.
Good evening, Johnny. I travel a lot for fun, mostly business. I used to do a lot more, but. Nowadays, I just hate going every airport. I'm looking over my shoulder to see if some, you know, TSA guy is going to just pick me to be his person he hassles today. It's just very uncomfortable. You feel like, you know, you're cattle in a, you know, in something like Animal Farm.
Oh yeah, and you know what's amazing, man, is like the utter randomness of it. I was like behind this poor kid. I was in Logan Airport a few years ago for no reason. They pulled him aside. I mean, literally, they went through everything. They ransacked him there, and I was thinking, what did he do? But apparently, this is standard issue behavior. Was this woman murdered? I'm saying yeah. I'm going with yeah. Let's see what the autopsy says, if assuming they don't queer it out entirely. My name is Johnny Wendell. This is the Mike Malloy Radio Show. I'm in for the vacationing Mike. You can call us at 800-989-1480. Nova M Radio Network. We'll be back. This is the Mike Malloy Show with Johnny Wendell in the Nova M Radio Networks. I'm a conquest. I love this song, The White Stripes. What a crack up, man. We are talking about this incident that happened actually happened Sunday. It was revealed to us on Monday at Phoenix Sky Harbor Airport of this woman, Carol Ann Gutbaum's 45-year-old woman, got three kids back in New York City. Heading to Tucson, Arizona to a detox rehab. She had an alcohol problem. And apparently she missed her connecting flight to Tucson, went crazy. She was restrained by airport cops, shackled to a bench in a side room, and ended up dead, allegedly, by strangling herself. That sounds kind of hinky to me. I don't know about you. All I know is this. When you are cuffed... in America, and I've seen people cuffed and chained. I've seen people cuffed and chained in airports. Last time I went through Houston Airport, I saw somebody cuffed and chained, okay? The cuffs are behind your back. the single line that attaches you to the bench is going from around the cuffs or around your wrists behind you, right? Visualize with me, work with me here, okay? I want you to tell me how it is that you would be able to either roll yourself under that line or pull the cuffs from behind you and roll the steel of the shackling around your neck and choke yourself to death. No, I'm sorry. I don't see it. And admittedly, I have a history with this kind of thing, and I got to explain, if you give me a minute. When I was a kid, and we all went off to college, one of my friends was a guy by the name of Jeff Rimes, R-I-M-E-S, just like Leanne, the singer. Only he wasn't Leanne, he was Jeff, and it was a long time ago. He went to school at Syracuse University, upstate New York. And we got word that Jeff, one weekend in Syracuse, had hung himself in a jail cell. I got to tell you something, I knew this guy. He's a good-natured, likable, wonderful human being. Never, ever had anybody heard of the ideation of suicide from this guy. But on a Saturday night, if he drank too much and mouthed off to the local cops, they hang him in his jail cell and say it's a suicide. Imagine you're the parents of that boy. Your boy committed suicide in a jail cell in Syracuse. Imagine you are the three children of Carol Ann Gutman in New York City, or her husband, who is now raising these children by himself. And they say, "We're sorry, your wife has committed suicide in an unusual fashion." You wouldn't buy it. I don't. We are at 1-800-989-1480. You following this story? 1-800-989-1480. I think, unless the autopsy is rigged or screwed up by the Phoenix cops, and by the way, they don't exactly have the best reputation in the world, Phoenix, that they will show that the idea that this woman committed suicide was ludicrous. 1-800-989-1480 is our number. My email is tbcwra@aol.com. We're getting so many calls, I won't be able to talk to everybody, but I'm going to try. I see.
Hi.
Off the internet in Las Vegas. You're on
Hi.
With Johnny.
Hi. How are you, Johnny?
I see. What do you think?
I'm outraged.
By me?
No.
Oh,
by
okay.
the whole situation.
Yeah.
You know, I'm so glad that you are outraged.
It doesn't make me happy, I see. I got to tell
know,
you.
I know. It doesn't make me happy either, but I knew that it was fishy from the beginning when I first heard the story.
Yeah.
And stuff. And I just can't believe this. Thank God that her family has some money.
thank God her family has money. I see it's not going to bring her back. She's dead.
I know. But
all the money in the world can't bring you back. She's gone.
They can investigate.
Mm, okay.
They can investigate because this was fishy from the beginning.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, it's crazy. You know, that it's fascism and police state all over the place.
Well, okay. All right. Yes. You know something? I'll go along with that. It's fascism and police state all over the place. And you know why? Because this atmosphere has been created by a government in Washington, D.C. wants to scare the hell out of us. You know what's funny? They talk about trickle down. They talk about trickle down economics. How come they don't talk about trickle down hysteria? Because it gets all the way down to these three gigantic men that had to somehow use all of their muscle and power to subdue a 5'7", 110-pound woman. She is right. It does not wash. Garrett in Clarksdale, Mississippi, birthplace of the blues, on Sirius. You're on with Johnny.
How you doing? First of all, you need to know a couple things about that case. The Gottbaums, the mother and father
yeah.
of the woman that died,
yeah.
are probably, and the Arizona police probably have Pampers on right now, because Betsy Gottbaum is number two in line for mayor of the city of New York. She's also the director of the New York Police Foundation.
Oh, okay.
So she has more connections than, you know.
They hung the wrong woman.
They definitely hung the wrong woman.
Okay, gotcha.
One thing I know for sure is that they were told they were going to do an autopsy. The Gottbaums sent their own autopsy expert there.
Right.
Because they didn't trust the police.
Who would?
Also today,
go ahead.
The husband was at the mortuary with another pathologist.
With a forensic pathologist,
forensic pathologist, and
yeah.
three lawyers.
Right.
So this is not going away for Arizona. And what makes it worse is the husband is one of the most prominent labor people in New York.
Yeah, Victor Gottman, yeah.
Victor Gottman.
Right.
And I can just imagine that Arizona must be going nuts because this is Super Bowl. This is the year they're supposed to have Super Bowl in Arizona.
That is in Glendale, yeah.
And, well, you all fly into Sky Harbor to get to Glendale.
That is correct.
And if this labor gentleman wants to really cause a ruckus, I'm sure he can make a few calls to the airline union.
To the Teamsters, to everybody else, and shut everybody else down. Yeah, I got to tell you something, though, Garrett. In a way, that's wishful thinking. It's us hoping for justice. But it doesn't mitigate an interesting idea. And a very sad one. Actually, Garrett raised something that makes me kind of sick to my stomach in a way. I mean, thank you for calling, Garrett. I appreciate that you did. But isn't it sad to think that you have to be connected to a family that's second in line to being the chief of police in the biggest city in America to get what? To get justice. Carol Ann's family may get something approximating justice. It ain't real justice because they can't bring her back from the dead. That would be justice. Never going to happen. She's not Christ. However, because she's rich and connected, somebody in Phoenix is going to pay. Their heads are going to roll. But if it was me, if it was you, we'd just be another statistic now, wouldn't we? We're at 800-989-1480, 800-989-1480. What do you think happened to Carol Ann? You think that she actually killed herself? Or do you think that the cops did her in? Red and Sacto at KSAC, you're on with Johnny.
Yeah, hi, Johnny.
Red.
Yeah, good show, good topic.
Thank you.
And long overdue that we talk about it. It's too bad that we have to have tragedies happen to be outraged day by day.
Yeah.
Being turned into a police state because
no
this
kidding.
Is not new. You know, this starts in the 40s with Billie Holiday being, you know, hauled down the steps of the New York Library.
That is, well, and before that, and Sacco and Vanzetti before that, and the Scottsboro
yeah.
Boys before
yeah.
that, sure.
It goes on day by day.
Right.
It does not have anything to do with police officers themselves, although often they're the casualties. They get turned into animals.
But when we're talking about Billie Holiday or Sacco and Vanzetti, you're talking about a black woman, you're talking about the Scottsboro Boys, were black kids in Alabama.
Yeah, but
when you're talking about these people, I mean, this is a wealthy white woman from Manhattan who was strangled by the cops, my friend.
And that's why we're reacting, because this is now reaching into the middle class, that you, in an airport, a white person doing rehab or having some other problem or just needing to get somewhere on time might wind up dying in a holding cell in an airport.
Sure, I understand you here. But the thing is, it's like, I'm not going to turn this into one of those, like, the missing blonde girl in Aruba type things, Red. It's not going to happen that way. I'm saying this. I find that it's kind of distressing in a way that you have to be a wealthy, powerful, connected person from Manhattan, New York City in order to get anybody to pay attention to you. If this had been just a regular traveler from a foreign country, nothing would have happened. They would have thought, a suicide. As it is someone who is married to a labor leader who's in line in the police department, the biggest city in America. Now, all of a sudden, it's a big story. That's sad in and of itself. Is this what it's going to take to wake up America? Do you believe, like Red does and like I do, that it has now become a trickle-down police state in our airports? I'd say this is proof of same. Yes or no? 800-989-1480, 800-989-1480. And I would like to hear from people in the greater Phoenix area about this, as to how much play this is getting, or whether or not they're trying to sweep this under the rug so it doesn't cause a furor by the time of the Super Bowl in early 2008. We're at 800-989-1480, that is our number. We can be reached via email at tbcwra@aol.com, tbcwra@aol.com. This is the Mike Malloy Show. My name is Johnny Wendell, and this is the Nova M Radio Network. smash left in 84. This is the Mike Malloy Show. Johnny Wendell sitting in for Mike Malloy on the Nova M Radio Network. That's me singing, by the way. I used to be a rock and roll musician in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. Then I grew up and became a talk radio host to talk to you. And I am at 800-989-1480, 800-989-1480. That is our phone number here on the Mike Malloy Show. We're talking about this incident at Phoenix Sky Harbor Airport last week. 45-year-old woman dies mysteriously in a holding cell with her hands bound behind her back. Allegedly, she strangled herself. She committed suicide, sitting down with her hands bound. Mirabile dictu, will wonders never cease? In sunny Phoenix, Arizona, in their charming little airport in Sky Harbor. Do you think that that story makes any sense to you? A woman 5'7", 105, 110 pounds, subdued by three rather large men, hands cuffed behind her back, chained to a bench in a holding cell, and somehow she ends up dead. It doesn't wash. I'm sorry. I think they crushed this woman's windpipe. And I got to tell you something. They have released a video of the woman who died. It will be coming out. We have now unearthed a story here where apparently a battery of attorneys by the woman's family is going to be with the forensic pathologists who are doing the autopsy. And here's a little story. I'm talking to you from Southern California. I want to tell you this little tale. We're raised. Those of us raised in the suburbs, we're raised to believe the police are our friends, right? Police are okay. They uphold the law. You got to have respect for the badge. Respect the blue, right? Well, here in Southern California, check this out. Suburban sheriffs south of the city in the Lakewood Station in Los Angeles, suburban sheriffs had deputies vying to book the most people and impound the most vehicles. They found this out 2 days ago. Okay, and Sheriff Lee Bacco, who's the sheriff of Los Angeles, he ended this. It was a competition to see who could make the most busts and seize the most cars. I kid you not. Baca said he wasn't aware of the competitions, and he ordered them stopped. Okay? 200 deputies are based in this area, and they had impounded dozens upon dozens of vehicles. They were competing with each other to see who could steal the most automobiles legally from the people of Bellflower, L.A., Artesia, and Hawaiian Gardens. That's what the cops in America are now. We're supposed to respect authority. That's what they teach us. Yet, how can we when authority won't give us a reason to respect them? When tiny little women somehow kill themselves via the miracle of contortion and acrobatics in airports in Phoenix, meanwhile we got sheriff's deputies competing us to see who can put the most Porsches behind bars in Southern California. That is what we are up against now. And I know I don't want to make the sound all global and go insane on you here, but this is the classic example of the fish rotting from the head down. We have lawless government in the United States right now. We have an animal with a brain the size of a radish who's the president of the United States who's being manipulated by a knucklehead who had five heart attacks, five deferments to stay out of Vietnam, and hasn't obeyed five laws in his entire life. So naturally, what cop figures, you know something? Yeah, I'll take the law into my own hands. Why shouldn't I? Because that's what's happening in D.C. Like I said, that's how we become a police state. And I think that's what happened. So you think this woman was killed in Phoenix? Do you think we become a police state? I got like 4 minutes left. Lay it on me. I am at 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. That is our number here. Tony from KPHX in Phoenix, Arizona. You are there, Tony. What's going on?
How you doing, Johnny?
What do you think?
Oh, I think it really is true, and I want to just give you a little bit of history. Just before this happened, a Phoenix police officer was shot in the face by an illegal alien jaywalking. And
what?
It seems like every time there's a police officer's death, there's a spike in citizen death. And the next day after this woman died, the very next day, another person was killed or died in police custody in the back of a patrol car.
Right.
So it's starting to be a trend, and it's getting very scary, and you hate to even be pulled over by the police. You feel like you're in Russia. I mean, it's just awful.
Tony, let me ask you something. You got street gangs in Phoenix, Arizona, like we got the Bloods and the Crips here in Los Angeles.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
I want you to reach back into your brain. I want you to give me a completely honest answer here, Tony. Who do you fear more, the bangers or the cops?
That's a tough question, but I would have to say these days the cops, after what I've seen. I mean, we've had several incidents of cops, I mean, people being arrested and dying. There was just a guy that was, I mean, actually, he was actually kind of crazy, but they tased him and he died. I mean, there's been several taser deaths here that police have used their taser, I think, unwillingly. I mean, and these are, and the other thing that I wanted to bring up out too is,
go ahead.
There's a steroid investigation going on here about cops being on roids.
They're roid raging and crazy too.
Exactly, and this is, and there's an internal investigation, but you don't hear much about it.
No, and why would you? And you just gave it all away, Tony. There's an internal investigation. The police are going to police themselves. They're going to police themselves. Doesn't that make you feel good? Doesn't that make you feel safe? We've decided that we're not entirely culpable. Aren't we wonderful? That's what we're up against, people. TJ in Sacramento, California. You're on with Johnny.
Great. Just a quick point. You were talking about how it's trickle down as far as the fear goes. I think it's really trickle up, because the people that have been the most disenfranchised and cut off, that have been putting up with this kind of police brutality and hostility for a long time, now it's finally starting to move its way up into the middle class and even beyond that. And I think it's a lot of people have been living with for a long time, and we're just starting to get a real taste of it.
Yeah. I you know something? I can't argue with that at all. Jen in Sacramento, you're on with Johnny.
Okay, hi. Yes, I'm going to mirror what the lady said. I'm from Sacramento, California, and our cops are notorious. They beat black people as if it's just going out for a drink of water. It is just outrageous.
Oh, my God. Can you believe this, though? America, land of the free, home of the brave, and what are we more afraid of than anything else? We have actually now gotten to the place, man. Check this out. We are now more afraid, because I'm hearing this in your voice, and I'm hearing it echoing in my own brain. We are more afraid now of the police that are supposed to be upholding our laws than we are afraid of the alleged boogeyman international terrorists that they dangle in front of us every single time they want to go invade and pulverize some pathetic third world country. Speaking on behalf of myself and my wonderful staff of Billy and Ian and the rest, I had a wonderful time with you this evening on the Mike Malloy Show. I'm at tbcwra@aol.com. My name is Johnny Wendell. Good night.